all your school rugby all in one place. This is Next Gen 50.
Hello and welcome to the Next Gen 15 podcast. We're on episode 4 of the new season, somewhere around that neck of the woods. It's been a pretty busy start to the year, so we've not had as many as we would have wanted, but we're back up and running, and we have got Sam Howard, a legend of the school game, alongside us today. Sam, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Really, really pleased to be on here.
Oh, that's good. We're looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. You've been keeping busy in the early part of the season?
Yeah, obviously I'm working at St Benedict's now under Zoran, and so he always keeps me busy. So yeah, my boy's playing at Whitgift, so I've watched them play a couple of times. So yeah, it's been a good start. Busy start.
Unbelievably busy start, hasn't it? It feels like.
And also it's been a really warm start, which I love. So we've had nice weather at the start of September. So it's been a good month.
My campaign for summer rugby, it looks like it's finally starting to come to fruition. I need to keep it up.
September's always a good month. Always a good month.
So September rugby, let's move the sevens to the cricket term. Let's, you know, let's start playing in the sunshine. That's where it's at.
I hear where he's coming from, but I think you got a lot of goalposts to move for that to happen.
It's easy. As long as everyone prioritises rugby, it'll be fine, right? Exams, cricket, who cares? It's all fine.
Yeah, I think schools are going in a slightly different way. I think it's going the complete opposite way, unfortunately, Angus.
I think you could be right. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, I believe, as well, and also up on YouTube if you want to see our faces for some unknown reason. And you can get in touch with us on @NextGen15, @NextGenXV. Where can people get in touch with you, Sam?
I am on Twitter or X. Sorry, I'm on X. That's how old I am on it. I'm on X. I'm on Instagram. So you'll find me. I'm generally under, I think, DYB Rugby.
Do your best rugby, right? That's what it stands for.
Yes, that's the one.
Where did that come from? That's always been a bit of a theme of yours.
Yeah. Okay. Bizarre. It came from actually when I was probably just out of university, was in a pub, and it was like this one of these drinking games. Everyone was like, get it down or neck it or something stupid, and someone was saying, I can't do it. I was like, okay, you don't have to do it. Everyone's like, yes, he does. I was like, no, he doesn't. He just has to do his best. And once they get started, they generally finish. And so that sort of just progressed. Actually, my mum has always said, there's no such word as can't. You can always have a go. And I've always just sort of gone on with that. And sort of, rather than saying, especially with kids, oh, I can't do that. It's like, okay, you don't have to do that, but at least give it a go. And most people surprise themselves with what they can achieve. Yeah. So it's sort of, that's the originate. That's where it actually started from.
There you go. From weird places. Schoolboy rugby, thoughts of genius arrive.
Yeah, I know. So that's the original where it came from. And it's just sort of developed from there.
Well, it's not a bad theme for kids to live by when they take onto the rugby field. Certainly wish I'd had more people tell me that when I was, you know, faced with some 6'9" monster and I'm going, I actually don't think I can compete with him physically. They go, yeah, you can.
Going, oh, I can't. Yeah, no, it's like, okay, you might not be able to, but give it a go. And again, as we say, we surprise ourselves at what we can achieve.
We certainly can. Bits and bobs of news this week. There's a cool thing going on. Be interesting to get your take on this, actually. So the England under-18s and under-20s, they've got a tight five camp this weekend. We're going to be doing a bit of stuff with that. I've got a chat with Jonathan Pendlebury coming up after this to talk about that. But really, the bit that seems quite relevant about it to me is it's the England under-18s and the 20s working together, which we've not seen very much in the last, as long as I've been knocking around the school game, I'm sure as long as you have as well. It seems as though finally things are starting to align a little bit more, and you might start seeing, I mean, we've had a chat about it before, haven't we, about, you know, what is the progression from 18 to 20 to seniors, and perhaps, just perhaps, this is the first shoots of teams actually starting to align and see if we can move people through the system in a way that actually starts producing results at the top end.
Well, yeah, it's great. What's is it worrying? I'm not sure. How the hell has it never been done before? Like, it's not rocket science, is it? Like, you've got all these guys, like, they're totally aligned. Everyone, like, the England coaches know who these players are from the age of, like, 15, 16. Obviously, there are changes. But, yeah, why wouldn't the under-18s work with the under-20s, make it a seamless progression? Why don't the 20s, or maybe they do some work with the senior squad? Like, these guys are going to be the future. So surely you just streamline them through, and they work together as much as possible. Like, it makes perfect sense. And actually, it's a bit surprising, if not worrying, that it hasn't been done before.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's sort of, it's one of those where you just go, how has this not been the case before? So actually, you've reminded me, because I think it is becoming more and more aligned right the way up to the top, because we've seen there's been a lot of stuff on social media. You know, social media teams always try and make things look as good and as exciting as they can. But it looks as though they've been calling lots of 20s eligible players in to train with the England squad in the World Cup. We've seen like Ben Redshaw, the Sepa skipper from last year. I think George Timmins from Millfield last year. A couple of other lads that have been in doing a week's training at a time with the England squad out in Latuke. So it looks like they're starting to try and align things and sort of get people used to the system. Either that, or there's a lot of injuries in camp and they're just trying to get some bodies out there. But I reckon they probably wouldn't be going for 20s unless there was a reason.
Yeah. Either way, it doesn't matter, does it? Even if there are injuries. Like, and who knows, maybe because of social media that we all see it, maybe it has been going on more. I'm not sure it has. But yeah, it makes perfect sense. I look at Marcus Smith. Like, some of these kids are coming straight out of school and playing in the Premiership. They're good enough, and good enough to play international rugby. So yeah, get them involved, stretch them, challenge them, like on and off the pitch as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems to make so much sense. And you know, we've seen how the 18s play. We've seen how the 20s try to play. We've seen how the senior teams play. And it seems like it has for a long time. Seems like they're not. None of them are trying to do the same thing. You've got the 18s who traditionally have been trying to just chuck it as much as possible. Then got the 20s who've been trying to sort of build some blocks, but it's certainly the last 5 years or so not quite worked. And then the seniors who are playing a very stagnant brand of rugby, you just go, this system is not aligned. But if they're trying to make it so, make life make life a lot more clear for everyone in it, and probably make it a lot easier to have some success, I'd have thought as well.
Yeah, and obviously it's all about the players. It makes it a lot easier for players. You've got someone like, let's say we've got Marcus Smith, you've asked him to play in some way for the 18s and then the 20s another way. And he's like, now I'm playing a different way. So if you can have a style of play and an alignment, and I think probably the Irish and the French and the Kiwis and the South Africans, even though they all play different ways, it looks to me as if their alignment is the same all the way through.
Which it seems to be a real sense of how they play as a nation.
Yeah, yeah. And probably all the players can sum that up and can articulate what they're trying to do, which is what you want. And it seems to be working for those guys.
Even Scotland, actually. I remember when Gregor Townsend took over, he announced a sort of blueprint for how Scotland would play. And basically, like, every team in Scotland got told, this is what it looks like. So that it succeeds where you are, but basically this is what it looks like and everyone should be familiar with it. And it's worked for them. I mean, they're up to fifth in the world.
It's the way that sort of the majority of clubs, the majority of schools sort of go about things. So the majority of schools sort of say, this is how we play, and there's a sort of blueprint, and some have like playbooks, and it goes all the way down from like the first 15 down to like the under 12s or 14s. Like, this is the Epsom way, or this is the Sebra way, or whatever. Clubs have it as well. It's like, right, we want our under 18s and 16s playing this way. So it makes sense for the national team to be doing the same. I get it's different when you've got so many people at different clubs and they all play in different ways, but yeah, you should try and align the 18s with the 20s and the seniors.
Yeah, exactly.
There's going to be tweaks, but don't make it as easy as possible for the players.
Well, exactly. You'd like to think so. Thinking about school stuff, it's Schools Cup Week kicked off this week. I reckon this is a good week to have you on, because I reckon you probably are the most synonymous person in the country with the Schools Cup. Maybe you and Wilco, and then we're going back to Colston's or Collegiate as they are now, way back in the 90s, to try and find anyone else more synonymous with it. So it's definitely good timing to have you on. You must have some awesome memories of it.
Oh, some incredible times. Some absolutely incredible times. Nerve-wracking. tense, but some like great occasions. And generally the sort of build up, most of the finals weren't as tense as some of the knockout games we had were incredible. So absolutely love the cup. The kids love the cup. Like, there's something special about cups. I suppose the whole Jeopardy, you lose, you're out. The carrot of Twickenham at the end. It's just special time for the kids, the parents, the whole school. Yeah,
there's that sense of momentum building, isn't there, that you don't get quite so much in the regular season, where you know each victory is a step on the rung, and suddenly everyone feels a bit better about themselves and thinks, oh, okay, this is getting possible, and you just get that sort of momentum.
Yeah, you definitely get momentum, and you can see other schools getting momentum as well. So like, because obviously you've got a little eye on who you're going to be playing, where they're going, and you're like, oh, that school's on a bit of a roll, and sort of whispers, and you guys are sort of out putting it all out who's going well. So yeah, it has a great sense of excitement around the cup. I absolutely love it.
But if we go back to some of those runs, I mean, the particular part of the country that you were in those four finals in a row with Dulwich, wasn't it, three titles in a row, right from day one, you were in, you know, that's London and South East section was just absolutely stacked. I mean, not least because you probably opened the season against, you know, Tunbridge, who were unbelievable at the time, Wellington College, who were unbelievable at the time, and then you go into Cup Round One against Whitgift or someone.
Well, that's the thing. It was like when we first entered, like the first year we entered was when the first year we won, so what, 11, 12. So we'd never been in the Cup. So we didn't really know what we were going into. Went in with no expectations. But back then, most schools were in it. So it was like, well, why don't we give it a shot? And the big thing was, okay, we go in, but we can't sort of jeopardise our normal Saturday blocks. So for, as you said, like the Tunbridge block, the Wellington block, Bedford block, they can't be jeopardised. Yeah. Because of the cup, so we've got to sort of maintain strong teams. So, but the our very first cup game was, because back then there was more schools, you didn't have the VAR, you couldn't choose. So it was like for instance, like yesterday, Trinity played Epsom first round. Like, ouch!
That's big round one time.
Yeah. Whereas we would our first couple of rounds would generally be a little bit sort of more forgiving. But we played Wallingham and or Wallington, we'd had, I think, I don't know, Wellington on the Saturday, and we were playing, I think, RGS High Wycombe on the following Saturday. So it's like, okay, it's away, it's Wednesday afternoon, this should be fairly comfy. So literally didn't take Benno, didn't take Jeremy Reason, left a few other boys behind. But we were still got a strong side, yeah. And we scored in the last play of the game to win. A lot of people might know we scored that. And then if it hadn't been like, literally, lose that game, that's it. All of that history, three cups in a row, all of that would have gone. So that was a bit of a wake-up call to not sort of take anyone too lightly. But back then, yeah, you could sort of build up into the cup, which was nice, which you sort of blood a few youngsters, year 11 boys. Sort of a few second team players that are on the fringe.
Which actually probably worked really nicely for you for those future years, because you've got guys then who are leading the team that have had good experience of how the whole system works.
Absolutely. It was, we really did use it as a blooding exercise. Like St. Joe's would take a big squad, take year 11s, get them to understand, sort of a bit like we were talking about with the England 18s and 20s, sort of understand what it's like to be around the first 15, the warm-ups, the seriousness, the intensity. But also realizing that it's not that big a jump, that they're actually all capable of playing in that environment. So it was nice. Well, as I said, now I don't think these schools have got the opportunity to do that, especially in the Southeast with the fixtures that are coming. Whereas we always used to have not like really, like, we're still playing good schools. Like, we always seem to play like Jard or Eton College early rounds. But then, as you said, then it'd be Fisher, Hampton, Whitgift, St. Joe's. Like, it's like, wow, here we come. Now we're getting into the meaty part of the competition.
It was a seriously, seriously tough competition. I mean, and in many ways, it's actually, I feel like it's kind of returning that way a little bit. It's more condensed, but that does mean that it's unbelievably intense now, because you've got, what is it, six rounds of games if you make it all the way to the final. So you've got three national games, quarter, semi-final, and then you've got three games in the sort of section part. But that actually does mean, you know, as you say, we've got Epsom against Trinity. We had a live game yesterday, Haileybury against Bedford. You know, these are big games to have in the opening, right? The Champions Oakham are hosting Stamford, I think, this afternoon. Oh, no, sorry, Tuesday next week. You know, that's a tough old game, big first game. Round.
Yeah, big games. So, which is, it's great that you've got more schools back in it, which is excellent. But I suppose because you've got the VARs and you've got schools that are able to sort of pick and choose where they go, you don't have that, as I said, the one or two earlier games that might be easier. But then the downside to that is you don't have maybe what people might see as shocks.
Yeah.
So like Elton, so when I went to Elton, we beat Trinity 2 years in a row in the cup, which was just fantastic for us. And that was when they're huge
results, those sort of games, aren't they? Because they change the whole feeling of what the rugby culture in a school is like.
Yeah, massively. And suddenly it's like, again, as I say, it's that belief, actually, we're not that far off. We beat Trinity in the second year, where we then played Whitgift and we gave them a great game. Like, ultimately, they were just a little bit too strong, but we gave them a shock. And sort of when I was at Dulwich, we played Elton College in a game and they were really strong and like took us to the wire. So it's a bit of a shame that like for instance, like St Albans this year are unbelievably strong and they're in the VARs or the whatever you call it. I'm not sure what it's called, but it'd be great to see them in the main competition and going toe to toe with the big guns.
Schools aren't, because they've got one good year or a couple of good years, they're not going to change their block fixture list, because ultimately in 2 years' time, probably they're going to settle back down to what their natural rhythm was. So actually being in the cup and being able to go, well, this is our chance to test ourselves against some of the others is a really good opportunity, because you don't want to see schools change their entire fixture list just because they've got a good team 1 year, because it just throws everyone else out of kilter because they've got to rearrange the whole thing. But yeah, you get a half decent cup run going, and suddenly you've got a bunch of guys going, oh, we could do something pretty special here. And then you get sides going all the way. I mean, look at some of the guys you played in finals when you were at Dulwich. You know, Old Swinford Hospital, they have a couple of really good years, achieved something unbelievably special, you know, came within a bit of a whisker of getting there, and you know, that's very cool for them. Similar with NSB, who've actually kind of built an entire program off the back of it, really.
They were
nowhere beforehand. I mean, they'd had Courtney Waters, but they had no real rugby to speak of, and then suddenly it's like off the back of that 1 year group of sort of providing a bit of inspiration and know-how, they've had a pretty decent legacy in the last, what is it, 10 years or something? That's a bit scary.
I think their rugby program's now immense. Like, I think they're very close to linking with the Northampton, but yeah, and they've got a huge amount of boys. But yeah, but still, you still got to work hard. You still got to have the correct coaching, and they're a real success story. Mark Lee, I think he's retired now. He drove it. He's a great guy. And that's the other thing about the cup. Like, I got to meet Mark through that. I only got to meet Zoran through the cup. And then we started playing block, and so you get to meet different schools, and you're not just playing the same ones over and over again. And that's why obviously St Joe's used to be so good, but look at who's at St Joe's now. It's pretty much just the top schools in the country who play against each other anyway. So yeah, so coming up in the cup against a few schools that you're not normally playing against, I think it's great. And as you said, Swinford Hospital, we were lucky in that final. Like, they probably, two of their best players got injured in the game, knocked each other out on this move, and they were causing carnage. Dom Fraser kicked every kick that went, and obviously that led on. So Yeah, anything can happen in the cup, and it's just a shame more teams aren't going in for it, I think.
I'll tell you what, anyone who doesn't know Don Fraser, what an unbelievable player he was. Was he lining up at 12, just kicked absolutely everything. Everyone's going, God, this guy's an absolute sensation. And he was kind of knocking around going, yeah, quite like cricket. That's as far as I can tell.
Yeah, well, what an like obviously what an incredible family. Obviously Henry Fraser, the brother, and like obviously horrific what happened to Henry and sort of breaking his neck on holiday. Obviously now there's a musical about him, just opened in the West End. And getting huge reviews. Andrew Lloyd Webber's like saying one of the best things. So Henry was on GMTV last week, and Cher came on and said, "I love the show." He was talking live with Cher. So the family are like, there's four boys, obviously Will Saracens, like Heineken Cup winner. So they're an incredible family. But yeah, Dom, obviously fourth brother, third one to come to Dulwich. But as you said, I remember that final, we got a kick just inside their half. And he's like, right, I'll have a shot at goal. And I'm like, he's got no chance. He's at Twickenham. It's massive. Bangs it over, and I think he kicked 6 from 6. I think in the two finals he played, I think his record was 11 from 11.
Yeah,
all over the pitch.
He was kicking like a seasoned pro. Like there wasn't, you couldn't go, that's lucky. It was, he just looked supremely confident. Knew exactly what he was doing. There was no hesitation. It was always just teeth.
Which is lovely to have in your team, especially sort of in a cup competitions when it is about the win. It's nice to have that in your back pocket.
It certainly is, but no, it's a cool competition. It seems to be getting itself back a little bit to where it was. It had a kind of funny few years where I think the mixed messaging of we don't want people overusing their players, and it's the importance of rest and not overplaying and all the rest of it, but then also we need you to play Saturday, Wednesday, was gave it a dark couple of years where it lost a lot of teams. But seems to be that maybe that's the reason for the truncated format, but the slightly truncated format does seem to mean that there are more schools coming back to it than there were.
Yeah, and obviously it's the fact that you've got a lot of schools, and we're one of them that are one-term rugby, and then obviously it goes deep into March. So that for us was always a massive challenge. Like most of our players were playing hockey or football after Christmas. So then trying to train, maybe get some fixtures, and then you're playing quarterfinals against Hampton, and then a semi-final against like a crazy St. Joe, straight crazy strong St. Joe's team. It's not easy. And so other schools would be like, oh, you can see why other schools might not enter it because of that reason. So there's all sorts of different reasons, and every school has different priorities and obviously different headmasters. So it is difficult, but it is a great competition, and it's great that there's more schools entering it, and there's maybe we want more different names on the cup. Great that Oakham won it last year. I think you want as many schools competing at the top end as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, every year at the kind of start of the competition, we do stuff where you kind of, you know, you look back at what's been, and you know, there are some of the sort of great school teams, but also just the mix of people that have actually been there over the years. You know, Bradford Grammar early on, you had Campion at the turn of the century. You know, these are places that if someone just walked into the school game 3-4 years ago, and you sort of listed off some of those teams that have had great success, they'd be going, what? I don't understand. That's the whole point. You know, these things are supposed to go in cycles to a certain extent, and you're supposed to get different teams doing things. Although it does tell you a little bit that there's an element of know-how in how to do these things. You know, you look at Wilco's been at Whitgift all these years and has managed to straddle about a 10-year period of having a bit of success. You look at Dosser Smith up at Oakham, you know, wasn't leading the charge last year, but he's got experience from those teams that did it 20 years ago. And a bit of know-how always goes a long way in knockout rugby.
Oh, yeah. And I think, like, there's that sort of, I think once you get a success, the boys then just take that on. And then, like, definitely at Dulwich, it was like, went, like, we had no expectations. It wasn't as if, right, we're entering this because we're going to win it. It was like we had a bunch of great kids who fought for each other with a couple of good players in there, and they just went on a roll. And like, it became a little bit annoying towards the end because every game we'd win, it was like, oh, the better team actually lost that. How did you win that? And it's like, after a while, I was like, we must be all right because we can't be the worst team and win every single week. And then obviously the second year, we did have a very, very good team. But then the third year, it was like those bunch of boys just like, right, we're not going to be the ones that lose. And they just went out with the utmost belief. And again, a bit of knowledge of winning cups. Like, we lost the three semifinals we won. We won by 1 point, 3 points and 2 points. Now, all three of them could have gone anyway. So a huge amount of resilience amongst those boys.
I'll tell you what, though, you know, if we were talking about the professional game, which is a different beast altogether, I accept, but if we were talking about the professional game and someone went, they got through those Premiership semi-finals, 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, 3 years in a row, they'd be going, that is exactly how you can tell that that's a culture that knows how to just get the job done in these situations. It's no different in school rugby. You know, eventually you just had a group there that knew what to do and how to do it, and probably more than anything, how to stay calm. That's the bit. Yeah.
I think that was that, as you said, that's a real big bit. And again, as I said, when we go right back to start, we just instilled this belief in them, and they had this innate belief, rightly or wrongly, that they could beat anyone. And when it comes to the end of the games, I think the other opposition, again, would often feel like, actually, they'd almost beat themselves. They're like, we ain't beating this Danish team. And I think that came through. Because I said, like, in that the last year when we beat Warwick 50 points, we didn't have any stars in that team at all. Right? Not one sports scholar in the team, just a bunch of South East London boys that cared about the school and cared about each other. And that's why they did so well.
Was it fly half that knocked over a drop goal against Hampton, I think it was.
I think he literally aged Zoran by 10 years in that game. So yeah, like, even I felt for Zoran then. It was like, not again. Johnny War. So that was
Johnny
that
War. Johnny War.
That was the year we lost in the final, though. That was the quarterfinal, wasn't it? Against Hampton, who we beat them 3 out of 4 years of us getting to the final, and they had some good teams. Like, they deserve to be in at least one final, if not more, over those few years.
They were fantastic.
That drop goal was an amazing moment. Like the crowd, both sides of the pitch, absolutely rammed. It was an incredible occasion. And Johnny, steps up and bangs over a drop goal last play of the game.
It's worth reminding people that don't that aren't familiar. So it was 2012, 13, 14, you got the titles. And 2015, you got to the final. Alongside plenty of other achievements at various other schools, but I guess for the purposes of this cup bit, we'll focus in on it. But it was an incredible run. I mean, you had some good players, but it did always feel like it was about the team, but also probably more importantly, it kind of linked to what we were chatting about with the 18s and the 20s. It was a style of play that evolved with each team, but style of play that was designed around, well, what's going to work for this group, which I always just thought was and is still, when you see it occasionally, very refreshing to just see, well, here's, okay, so what have we got here? We've got a lot of very good forwards. We'll play a forward orientated game. And then as you got towards the back end of that run, the back line became the stronger part of the team. And it was, okay, we can tailor this to play a wider game. And it was just very sensible, I always thought. And just, you know, if I'm a kid playing in that environment, I'm going, oh, perfect. Yeah, no, this makes sense. We seem to be doing well with that. That's what we want.
Well, I think the core words that you said then is, this makes sense. And it's like, I don't think it's rocket science, but I know for a fact, and having been at various schools and watching, like, some schools are like, this is how we play. We're going to play this way no matter what. And as you said, unless you are bringing in three scholars every year into the sixth form and you're picking, and there are a couple of schools that do that, and that's fair enough, but the majority of schools don't. That you've got to play every year that comes through that school is different.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you've got. So it's like, as you said, there's no point sort of saying, right, we want to play this all expansive like style. If you've got eight, or you've got three basic England props in your team, a good nine, and your bats are all pretty slow, but they're good kids and make tackles. So it's like, well, what's our strength?
Yeah.
We're going to play to that. And then, as you said, when you've got absolute flyers out wide, a nine and a 10 that can move the ball, and a pack that are just pretty mobile but not great dominant carriers, then you're going to move the ball and you're going to play an expansive style. And it was a great way to coach. That's why coaching schoolboys is so great. It sort of challenges you as a coach to get out of whatever your comfort zone might be. It might be like, oh, I like coaching this way. It's like, well, this is my style of rugby. It's like, well, that's not going to work with this bunch.
Yeah.
And you've got to evolve. And we'd always sit down, me, Tomo, Birdoff. And that's the other thing. There was a whole group of coaches at Dulwich, and it would be all the way probably from under 14s up, of sort of, right, what we got coming through. And we'd discuss, right, what's the best way for this? And it was like, and it worked. And the kids would buy into it. It's like, yeah, well, that makes sense. Yeah. We were very much
smart kids. They can recognize what they can do and what they're trying hard.
And we would very much do that through the school. So I know some schools, like the head of rugby or something, will say, right, this week we're going to concentrate on that, or we want to do that. I'm like, look, we're here, and the rugby staff, obviously there was a lot of good rugby coaches at Dulwich when I was there. Like, we're here to help the coaches. But it's like, I'm not going to tell you as the under 14A coach what you should be doing, because you see that team every Saturday. Like, so I could be saying, right, this week you've got to work on your ruckings. Like, our ruckings are amazing, but we can't tackle. So I'm like, okay. So it's like, right, yeah. So yeah, like, okay, there's a little bit of stuff, but then fine, you go ahead and do what's needed for you with that team. There'd be a few core sort of like your off pitch stuff and your no skills stuff, like your work rate and your sort of humility and sort of leadership and teamwork and all of that. That's the thread and the core that goes through. Yeah. But the way they're actually going to play, that's very much up to the individual coaches.
No, 100%. And it was always very noticeable. Although, mind you, the Tomo Moore, no matter what team you had, the Tomo Moore still always just seemed to be a thing of absolute beauty.
It wasn't a thing. Like, again, people are like, oh. But as you say, it was a thing of beauty because it was done so well. And it was done, as you said, like, even without massive packs, he had them doing it. And again, a bit like having Don Fraser being able to bang over a goal, being able to kick to the corner and know Tomo Wright, give us a cheap 5 points. But again, we say cheap, but hours went into it. The amount of time we spent.
Cheaper end product point, but...
Yeah, hours would go into it, and the boys bought into Tomo. Tomo would put a lot of work into it. And it worked. Like, I think, I'm not sure, one of the games at Twickenham, I think we scored from about the halfway line. It was incredible. They just kept going, and people go, it's not that easy to do, because it doesn't happen. No one else is doing it pretty much three times out of four, if not even more. Like, what we used to get from it was incredible. But again, that would be something that we looked at. It's like, what can we work on? Like, we never did any training on scrummaging ever, because it's like, you can only push a meter and a half. So if they're pushing us a meter and a half, we'll take it, we'll get set, and then we'll run our back move. Like, if we're dominant, we actually would give more penalties away from a dominant scrum than a weaker scrum. Obviously,
well, the hardest thing in the world, I'd imagine, for any prop, schoolboy or otherwise, is when you're going forward to suddenly stop going forward.
Like, you've got Benno, Jeremy Rees, and Big Josh in the front row, like, and like, it was like, just chill out. Like, that was all our scrummaging coaching was like, don't push hard. But whereas lineouts, this is a point of difference. So Tomo would probably have at least an hour every week that he would have for obviously over the course of the 4 or 5 sessions on lineouts. And as you said, yeah, it was a thing of beauty. It was great.
I always used to think, just bring it down really early, infringe early, and then hope the referees.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing. There are different ways of going. But again, like most things, like even referees, it became a thing everyone knew about. So the refs were like, well, this Dulwich Moore is a good thing. So as soon as it sort of went down, like, oh, they must be cheating. So that helped. It was great to coach. It was great to coach each team in a slightly different way. And really sort of reinforce what we were trying to do, how we were trying to evolve. It was a great challenge, but as you said right at the start, some amazing times. Like all of those semi-final victories were just so intense. Like the scenes afterwards were just awesome.
Oh, they were incredible games, incredible teams. I might get you to do something that I've not warned you about at all, but now that I start thinking about it, I think it might be worth it. Best team of the lot. If you could pick, like, you got all those.
As in 1 to 15. As in 15. 1 to 15.
Yeah.
Right now, off the top of my head.
Yeah. Front row should be
easy. Right. Okay. So, Benno.
Yeah.
Hooker. I don't want to upset any of them. Hooker, Billy Mostyn, prop. Oh, Jeremy Reason or Big Josh?
You can always move Josh to 8.
Yeah, I've got to. Yeah, I'm going to beat Jeremy Reason, prop, second rows. Some of it is going to have to come down to who I like because they're so good. God. You got Miss Shoppy, you got Josh Valance, second rows. Josh Valance, who, quick note, his dad was Dr. Valance through the whole COVID thing.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hugely supportive to Dulwich Rugby. So, Josh Valance and Charlie D.
Yeah,
son of as well.
Yeah,
so you got a little. So then,
in with the Joneses in the second row,
back row. How do I choose? So obviously, Domro Wright and Felix Maddison.
Yeah,
are given.
You're not missing any tackles out of that too.
And then John Winter played in 3 finals, but I think I'm gonna, as you said, I'm gonna go Jeremy Reason playing at 6 or Big Josh playing at 8. I think I need them all on the pitch.
Yeah.
9, Tommy O'Flaherty. 10, Ed Parsons. 12, Dom Fraser. 13, Tom Rosier. Nzegwe on one wing. Bubba on the other wing. And Ali Needham at fullback. Banks was a bit easier.
I reckon they'd go all right.
Yeah, they go okay that lot, and they're all on that, and they are all great, great kids. I'm in contact with most of all of those 3 teams.
Still. Oh yeah, I mean they always seem like a great bunch.
There are some incredible kids that aren't in that 15. And if you ask me again tomorrow, I'd probably give you a different team.
That's fine. What we'll do, we'll line them up against each other at some point. We'll get them going. We might have to leave Tommy and Benno out because they might be a bit too good nowadays. They've got too much training.
They've got Pierre Thompson though. Scrum off really doing, starting at Isha, playing really, really well.
He was brilliant.
And he was superb in that final against Warwick. So yeah, great player.
No, there were some good players. No, I like that. I'll put you on the spot, but I suddenly realised as we were going through.
Once this goes out, I want to know how long before I get a message from someone going, "Why aren't I in that?"
it'll be all the backs because you didn't even think about it; you just reeled them off.
No, in my head, Barry, Cam Henderson, Toby Anthony. No, there are boys in there that were close.
There were Well, I mean, all three teams that won it were superb. Obviously, getting there and the team that got to the final as well, you know, they can't be forgotten because that was a hell of an, in many ways, the best effort of the lot, because they probably had to fight for it the hardest along the way.
Yes, yeah, they did. They did. And I think they probably surprised us more than anything. That and they came up against a really good Bromsgrove side. Everyone has it, but like Ralph Marchant got injured in the semi-final at fullback, didn't play in the final. And I think we missed him a lot. They scored off a cross kick at the final play. That really good fly half, I can't remember his name, went to Queens. Controlled the game really well. That massive forwards.
Luke White, maybe something like that.
Yes.
Something
like that. Yeah. Yeah. And he played really well. And that's what you want. In those big games, you want your good players to play well. And we were always, our big players always played well in big games. Yeah. And he did that in that final for them. And so fair play to them.
No, it's always the key, isn't it? I remember Tommy running a game at one point, just like...
Oh, the semi-final against St. Joe's, he got three tries. Yeah. Got a hat-trick. We won by, as I said, 2 points or something.
Knew exactly how to do it. I mean, he was a fantastic player. It always struck me as completely insane that he didn't reach the sort of higher ends of the game faster. It just seemed bizarre.
No one wanted to know about him. Like I didn't used to push many kids towards the academies, but he was one that I was like, you want to have a look at our scrum half? He's not hard to miss. He's the 5'8" kid with a massive afro.
The afro left him at about 6'2". It was that.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was the best scrum half in the country. Like every team we played against was like, how's he not involved in something? Like he was incredible that year. He was incredible, and it was baffling how no one would even give him a little bit of a shot. It's like, what have you got to lose with these kids? He's scoring tries week in, week out. He makes tackles. His heart, like he was like, again, he's off the pitch. I absolutely love him. Like he's a great, great kid. So pleased with what he's gone on to do.
No, absolutely amazing. I still keep wondering, is there going to be an international cap at some point? I feel like he's not a million miles away. He's just...
I think too many younger, like Arundel bursting on the scene. I think a couple of, like obviously when Exeter won the European Cup, when they won the Premiership and he was starting week out, I think that was, if anything was going to happen, it would have been then.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's... You never know, but I think maybe it's... And the other thing, I always still think these kids are like, they must only be like 23, 24. Like Tommy's probably 30 now.
doesn't bear thinking about, really.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Oh, no, it's good. But we should look at the current day, I suppose, a little bit.
Definitely.
Three weeks into the season now, we're starting to see a bit of how the patterns are emerging, but I think it's always good to look at who's punching kind of above where we, not necessarily above where we thought they would, but above where they usually do. Cause there's a lot of schools out there that get a lot of airtime all over the place, but lots that don't really get any. And there's certainly a few, I mean, we mentioned St. Albans earlier that have come flying out of the traps with a hell of a team. I mean, they've got three England under 18s in that group and plenty of others, but you know, that's a school that if we'd been having this conversation 3 years ago, we probably wouldn't have even mentioned. But they seem to be absolutely flying. I mean, you saw them at close quarters the other day. They're pretty frightening.
So I wasn't with the first team boys, but I heard like Zoran was like, Bracken is the best school kid he's ever seen.
Really? Apparently
he scored 40 points. He says he's like, and like for me, right, people's like, so for me, like Elliot Daly was off the scale. Marcus Smith was off the scale. For me, they're the two that I always sort of pick out. And Ben Earls. And I think this Bracken, like Zoran's like, this Bracken kid is unreal. So he's playing on the wing for England, but he plays a fly half for...
Yeah.
So can you imagine someone that's got those skills and that pace at schoolboy level? He apparently just absolutely tore it up. Added to another couple of England internationals and probably a decent side. Their results, they've won 55, 66, 62. Like, they are racking the points up. I'd love to know how many of them he's got. Probably most of them.
Yeah, probably. Given particularly that I know that the other sort of big players in the team are in the forward pack, it probably is him collecting a lot of individual points.
So they, as you said, they're flying, which is great. And I think they've got, I was with the under-15s, they were very strong. They seem to be getting it right through the school, which is important. There's no, as you said, there's no point just having, right, again, some schools it happens, but you've got to try and be pushing it throughout the whole school, and they seem to be doing that and seem to be very well. As I say, it's just a shame. Like, it'd be good to see them like playing against some of the big boys in the Main Cup.
It'd be amazing.
And I think that's great. And then if you've got, like, it seems to me, I don't know, as if every year a school has the opportunity to enter either the main competition or the VAR. So if in a few years' time you get a few week of the year groups, then you can just opt out again.
Yeah, but tweak it again the other way.
I think you, like, as I said, and I think the players would like, come on, let's go and give it a whack against the big guns.
They'd certainly have a good shot at it, because they'd probably end up getting stuck in a Midland section as well, the way that
that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, they're probably closer to Northampton and schools around there than they are coming all the way to South East London or Kent or Sussex somewhere.
Yeah, I think they'd probably end up there.
And yeah.
So the other one actually that's impressing me quite a lot up that way is Mill Hill, who seem to have made big strides in the last, well, certainly for this season. And
obviously their big win over Felstead was a sort of standout result. I think that they've just recently set up a very strong link with Saracens. I think they've set up an ASA program there. So when those things happen, results seem to quickly go on an upward trajectory.
It pays to cement that relationship.
And so I think that their intake is now probably a lot different than what it used to be, which, again, no surprise, suddenly you're getting good players, suddenly you're going to go.
Yeah, exactly. And a similar case in the Southwest for Kingswood, who I remember in the summer, it was, you know, there's those two academy weeks in the summer. And I was looking at team sheets coming in, an extraordinary number of Kingswood players in the Bath side. And I was like, maybe there's been some movement at sixth form, but they've still got them down with the old school because they've not moved on for the summer. Yeah. But looks as though they've definitely all stayed.
We all say about schools, you do need good players. Like Whitgift have got Elliot Daly and Marlon Yard in the same back line. Like, they should be tearing up trees. Like, some of the Sebras teams over the past have got like five England schoolboys in it. It's like, you've got Kingswood, have got however many Bath or Bristol, whatever academy players they're in, they're going to be good. So it's the schools that do it over a sustained period. Like, I think we might be talking about, like, it's John Fisher, Whitgift this weekend. It's like schools like Fisher that do it year in, year out, are the ones that I'm like, tip your hat to.
It's incredible. Oh, 100%.
But as you said, if no one has got any right to sort of get on their high horse about it. If a headmaster or the school wants to go in a certain direction, then who is anyone else to say they can't do that? So, but it's good that you get different names. So yeah, so Mill Hill, so Benedict's have got them this Friday night. So that's going to be a real tough ask. Kingswood, as you said, smashing it down in the Southwest. So it's good to ruffle a few feathers.
Well, exactly. It's always good because it throws in the potential for upsets, and
and that's what we want. We all like an upset. Especially in the cup, and it's great. And as you said, a lot of the same schools get a lot of airtime and press coverage, and everyone's talking about them. So it's great to have different names sort of mentioned every now and then.
It certainly is. I'll tell you who hasn't been throwing in upsets, because they are everything we expected so far, is Harrow. That is a team that are doing some serious things. It's also a team that they're conceding quite a lot of points, but it doesn't matter because they're just scoring constantly.
I think they're the team to beat, aren't they, this year? Especially in the cup, without sort of Sebra being in there and things like that. So yeah, I think that whoever beats Harrow, if anyone does beat Harrow, probably has their name written on that cup. They're extremely strong. I watched the like the semi, was it the semi or quarter final against game against Trinity last year? When Trinity's defence, like obviously we built our success on our defence. Trinity's defence in that game against Harrow was outstanding, absolutely outstanding, and they took the one or two chances they had. But that defeat probably makes Harrow even stronger this year.
Yeah.
Because they did made a couple of maybe errors, a couple of tactical errors maybe in that game that you're thinking they won't do that twice.
Yeah.
And
it's just that extra level of motivation for the boys in there.
Yeah. And obviously in, who's the captain? Is it Vunipola or is it
Kepu Tuipulotu? Yeah.
So it's he's something special for a schoolboy. He's incredible. He's absolutely incredible. And
there aren't many schoolboys that play in any position, but he, I think, genuinely is one where you could just go 1 to 15, we're just sticking you in the team.
You'll be the best player probably on the pitch. He's an absolute joy to watch. And they play nice rugby as well. They chuck it around Germany. It's easy when you've got amazing backs. So, yeah, I think that they're the team to watch. And it's, what have they got? Them versus Wellington this Saturday.
They beat Wellington on Saturday.
They beat Wellington, yeah. And again,
in another one of those, it was 38-36 or something like that. 38-31.
Yeah. Just crazy. Any team that beats Wellington, you know, is good.
Absolute crackers.
They're playing this Newman, a Cardinal Newman, that as we talk about new schools, who are heavily linked, I think, with Elin, and they played in the Isha Festival.
Yeah, they won it.
And there you go. They were just massive, which a lot of these schools, colleges, whatever, that are involved with academies generally are huge.
Yeah.
But the only thing on that would be is how many of them will be allowed to play because of the three sort of sixth form entrants.
Yeah, they'll have to apply. You've got to apply for collegiate status or something.
Yeah, may have. So it'd be interesting, whether... Because if they've got their full team out, and I think it's a bit like Ipswich, they get a lot of sixth form entrants, don't they? So, but if they're able to put their full team out against Harrow, then that could be a real ding-dong game.
It's another one of those proper first-round games that we've been talking about where it'd be interesting. But it's funny, so Harrow, their first game of the season, they pipped Clifton and got a message from James Melville, head of rugby down at Harrow, and he was like, that's the best game of school rugby I've been involved in. Clifton were obviously making a habit of that because we were then, on Thursday last week, we had the live game, Clifton against Millfield, a memorial game for one of their old boys, Ryan Bresnan. And that's the best game of school rugby I've ever seen. 43-41 Clifton. It was...
Ridiculous. Clifton have been getting it right now for a few years, haven't they? Sorts of doing... And I think Danny Crewcock's down there now as well, isn't he? Yeah. They're doing a really good job and have been for a good few years. They've been producing good team after good team after good team.
It was incredible. It was actually, I mean, we spoke earlier about the kind of the mental side of some of those Dulwich teams. It was a feat of mental endurance. They were getting fundamentally hammered by Millfield in the first half. They just couldn't get any territory, couldn't get any possession. Millfield was scoring tries. They were stringing phases together, getting on the front foot phase after phase after phase. And probably if they'd been another try gone, we were sort of saying in commentary, sort of off air at half time, we were like, this has got really difficult scoreline to come back from in the weeks to come.
Yeah.
All over it. Second half, they came out and just went, no, not having that, and just battled their way through and then scored a last play winner. You just go, geez,
that's great,
takes a lot as a kid. Like, that's hard at any level, but when you're 17, 18, that is hard.
But I think you find something like schoolboy rugby now is so good. It's the skills of the kids, the physicality, the tactical know-how, the game sense, but it's still got that, I think, and I hope, it's still got that schoolboy innocence to it, that it's not cynical, or it shouldn't be. And I think it's one of the best forms of rugby to watch. Listening with pet, go and watch your kids play, go and watch your nephew, go and watch your mate's son, go and watch your godson, whatever it is, go and watch a good schoolboy game, and you'll be glad you won't often come away going, oh, that was a waste of my time.
Oh yeah, it's an unbelievable level of rugby, but also just as you say, that innocence of just going for it. You know, and actually, and you know, another one of the sides that seems to be standing out early on is Ipswich. You know, watching them, it is literally that. It's going for it. They've got a 12 and a 15. Well, in fact, in the going for it sense, it's the 15 really is the key guy in it. In that he just gets the ball at fullback and goes, I've got the beating of these guys in front of me, and goes for it. You know, as you go higher up the game, that kind of gets coached out of you a bit, partly because the defenders are your equal, but also partly because, you know, there is a risky element to going for it, and they don't want to take that risk. It's just incredible to watch a guy just get the ball in the backfield and go, I think I've got this.
And it is special seeing a fullback do that, and it does happen a bit more at school world level because there are spaces, but like we had Timo Swill for a term at Dulwich, and watching it, some of the tries he scored from the back were just an absolute joy to watch. Ali Needham used to do it, and I think, but he used to do it in a weird way because he didn't look like he was. I remember at St. Joe's one year, he could have had three tries of the tournaments, from kick. I think two were against Brighton. I think because he looked small, he didn't look quick. Teams were sort of underestimating, and then like, bang, 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 off he goes. It's
also because he wasn't really involved in an academy or anything. No. It was like one of those kind of rare unknown quantities, you know, kind of everyone knows who they need to look out for a lot of the time. But he was one of those guys where it's like, well, he's not been on any Saracens team sheet or anything like that. So he's probably, he might be all right, but nothing to worry about. And then suddenly get going, you go, uh-oh.
He's done again. Yeah, no, he was great to watch, Ali.
He was absolutely amazing. But it's unbelievably impressive what they've been doing down at Ipswich.
Yeah.
They've dedicated a lot of time and resource to it, but not many teams crack being able to go and compete with your Sedbergh. Well, I mean, we've got the live game this weekend, they're playing Sedbergh. You'd probably say Sedbergh are favourites for it, but the very fact that there's a thought in your head, not many teams, no matter how much they try and aim for it, get to go and compete at that level at school, in the schoolboy sense.
No, I fully agree. Are they in the cup, Ipswich, or are they?
They are in the cup. I don't know if they'll be able to play their proper team or not.
Because they had a bit of a surprise knockout last year, didn't they? Again, was it Finsbury or something?
Yeah. School? Well, Finsbury ended up being the team that surprised everyone last year.
Yeah. Which is great. Again, great that school does that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Sedbergh Ipswich at the weekend, that's a game, isn't it?
That's a real game. And again, as ever, fair play said, but for the amount of travel that they put into...
They have to travel even to their closest game. They've got to travel, haven't they? So if they're going to travel, they may as well do it properly.
If they just want to nip down the shops, they've got to travel. Yeah.
But as you said, fair play to them. They don't shy away from anyone. They'll take on anyone. They're a school that do play a brand. They play fast. They want to move the ball. They don't rely on size, even though they've always got some units. You can't help but be impressed with what Sedbergh do.
It's always impressive from them. And this will be an interesting one to see. I mean, they've started off the season very nicely as ever, but it's probably the first big test. Actually, it's worth just letting the listeners know we've got a hell of a Saturday coming up in terms of live coverage. So we're off to Ipswich. We start at 11 o'clock in the morning. We're doing the under-16s game, Ipswich said. But so we're getting a nice big build-up. And then 1 o'clock, we get the first 15. And then jump over, switch stream, and we've got Rugby School against Oundle, all part of the 200-year celebrations at 2:45. So three games back to back for anyone that's wanting a bit of a World Cup warm up on Saturday. We've got some good stuff in there, and actually Rugby Aundle would be a really good game as well, because Rugby looking for a first win in this pretty big season, well, very big season for them. But Aundle, who are having their best season in a long time, took them 5 years to win an away game, and they've just won back to back away games. So they're going to be feeling
pretty good. As you said, two traditional big rugby schools. So and in a massive year for rugby school. So that should be a good one. But as you said, it's hard to look past there. But there's some big games. Well, there's big games every week.
There's always big matchups. But we've got some cool ones coming up, I think. Well, actually, you know, how about the Croydon Derby, John Fisher wicket? In many ways, well, it's, at times it's been one of the biggest games in the country in terms of quality. It might not be quite at that level this year, but it's certainly still one of the biggest.
I think it's in terms of in terms of rivalry in England, it's the biggest one, I think. Right? Yeah. In terms of two schools that are literally what, less than a mile apart, yeah. One big sort of private school, one local state school. So totally different set of boys that just go hammer and tong at it. Massive crowd. Like, I think it's like, as I said earlier, I have nothing but utmost respect for what they do at John Fisher. Year That's after incredible. Year, they produce good teams. Like, we used to have some ding dongs with them. Obviously, like, a lot of the boys know each other. So yeah, Dulwich, it used to be one of my favourite fixtures. Goldie was superb host. Mike Davis, like, it was, that was one of the Saturdays that I look forward to all of them, but that was right. But that was right up there, and I miss those big Saturdays. But yeah, Fisher Whitgift, as you said, Whitgift probably not quite as strong as they maybe always are. Losing to Hurst Pierpoint last week. Fisher have come off the... Fisher looked like typical Fisher. They lost, I think, first week to Eton, but then have smashed Wimbledon. Like, for Fisher, it's whatever can turn up on the day. And their coaches know that. It's like, Fisher turn up and the boys are up for it, there's almost nothing you can do about it. If they want to win, they will. But if a few of the boys don't quite feel up for it, then you're always in for a in with a chance. But yeah, no, that's
lots of people forget about Fisher as well. They have so many people in that school, like, it is absolutely massive.
Yes,
and so if they get a sort of a couple of years that are really into their rugby, geez,
they can just do special things. Yeah, no, it is. It's, and they've got great staff, and they've got continuity in staff there. That do amazing work with those kids. So, yeah, that's a game that that I'd love to go and watch. Actually, it's a big game. My boys. So, is it on Saturday or is it a Friday night?
Saturday.
Yeah. So the 15. So my boys at Wickie Fund. He's in the under 15s. They're playing John Fisher in the under 15s cup, but they're playing on Friday night. So they've got Friday night lights on the first team pitch. So that's
going to be a game.
And that's great. I think, like, the fact that more schools are doing sort of Friday night lights, like the little three-way competition between Judd, Ravenswood and the Grange school last weekend.
Yeah.
Like how good's that? The Oxford game at Iffley Road, like, between Eddies and Morden. Like, what a great idea. Like, again, why has that not been done? Like, maybe, like, the Lees and the Perth can look at doing something at Grange Road in Cambridge. Like, all these things. The fact that school is always looking at how to improve, how to make the game more accessible is great. We always say
it when we're going out and, you know, doing these live games and all the rest of it. It's like, so there are certain games that are just massive games that you want to give a bit of promotion around, but actually a lot of the time it's just going, let's add to the experience as much as we can. Let's make this as memorable as we can. Let's go to that game at Iffley Road on Friday night, which was a hell of a game. Like 1,500 people there or something. It was nuts.
Yeah.
But also, it's like, all these lads are going off to uni next year. Let's give them something that when they turn up, they can show off to all their new mates and all the girls and all the rest of it with, of being able to pull up a clip off YouTube of them being brilliant in front of 1,500 people.
I think it's great that so many schools are sort of looking at ways to develop, ways to open the game. And again, like three-way tournaments, looking at how to make things better, just constantly looking to make the game better and open it up. I think it's brilliant.
100%. Well, speaking of that, you've got a Friday night game. Benny's got a Friday night game against Mill Hill. That's going to be, as we sort of touched on, an interesting one just to get a gauge on where Mill Hill are as much as anything else. A good chance of Benny's to bounce back after.
It's been a tough start. And actually, like, again, as my sort of one of the Manchester coach, as long as you're getting better, all you can ask for is every week, let's keep improving. And they are, like, they played Digest Guildford last night. Massive pack, Matt. Like, we talk about line out drives. I think they scored four tries from line out drives, and it's sort of when you're on the end of that, it's hard. There's like not much you could do. But we played better. So yeah, so Friday night.
That'd be a good fun game, Matt.
I think so. I think so. We're playing. We're getting better. It'd be interesting. But again, even I say, like with the Dulwich, it depends. If a team have got a Bracken, if a team have got a superstar, there's hardly anything you can do about it. You know, when we used to play Wick, if they had Elliot Daly, it's like, well, let's try this, let's try. Like, some kids.
Unless you can literally stop him getting the ball.
Yeah. Like, it's easy with forwards. Like, we played Ben Earl 1 year, and it was like, basically, when Henry gets the ball, he gets four of you. And it's, and poor kid came off black and blue, but like, we did it. Like, it worked for us. We won the game. But it was like, so with forwards, it's a little bit easier. You just got to be, but like, with an outside back, like, once they get the ball, they're just so dangerous. Like, as I said, Elliot Daly was almost unplayable. Marcus Smith was not too far off that as well. So that's the thing. If Mill Hill have got a couple of special backs, as I said, there's not much you can do about it. That's why some of those, as you said, some of these top games, when the likes of Seb Brook playing Millfield and Wellington and Harrow, when both teams have got two or three of those players and they're going against each other, yeah, it's great to see. And like at St. Joe's, it happens, and it's like an awesome player against another awesome player. It's really good.
Yeah. Well, St. Joe's, yeah, well, when they're absolutely shattered and
broken,
going for it and broken, yeah, and just
it's the best. We talked about the cup, but St. Joe's is the best tournament. But maybe we'll talk about that another time.
Well, it's certainly creeping up. Actually, there's another game on Friday that I just want to touch on, not in terms of detail, but just because I think it's quite cool. So Kirk and Graham are taking on Methodist College from Belfast, who are probably not one of the Irish schools that we're all hugely familiar with, but there are quite a lot of games this season between some of the top English schools against some of the top Irish schools. I know that Blackrock College are playing, I think, Clifton and Sedbergh. I think St Michael's might be playing Kirkham later in the season. It's quite cool to see those sort of international games happening, because we hear so much about how great the Irish system is. You want to take them on and see
where we stack up. Absolutely. As you said, like Friday night, playing against teams from Wales, from Ireland. They all sort of take you out of the comfort zone, start doing something different. Like St. Joe's, like I think Blackrock used to come over. There would always be an Irish team. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen anymore. But yeah, you want, like, you give your kids, the boys, different experiences, coaches, different experience, meet new players. I think, yeah, it's fantastic that they're playing. As you said, Irish teams, I think one of the Northern teams is playing one of the Scottish teams. Was it last week or this week?
Sedbergh taking on Dollar Academy last week.
That was right. Like all four. It's great. It's absolutely great that we, obviously can't happen all the time, the logistics of it and maybe cost of it and things like that. But where possible, it's absolutely fantastic that that's going ahead.
Yeah, it's just really cool. Right, we're running a little bit short of time, so we'll just rattle through a few of these things that are coming up. There's always loads and loads of good games, and no time to go through them all, but a couple of derbies. We've got Stamford, Uppingham, Epsom, St John's. That'll be interesting, because I think Epsom have had that cup game yesterday. I think St John's had a Vars game. Barnard Castle, Queggs, two of the sort of big
northern
famous
teams
from the north. I mean, Barney, who I don't know how they've never won a cup, but they've been to about four finals.
They have. They do really well, because it's not a big school, is it? It's a small school, so they do really well. And a lot of those northern schools aren't as big. Like, if you think about the sort of Wycliffe and Dulwich and Tunbridge, they're massive schools. But those northern, like Queggs Wakefield, used to love playing Queggs Wakefield or St Joe's. Thinking about Barker, they had a rugby, great guy, proper old school rugby sort of school coach. So love a lot of those northern teams. Dulwich Wellington this week.
Dulwich Wellington. Well, I was going to ask you, so when you were in the sort of Dulwich heyday of those teams, was that probably the biggest game on the calendar at the time? Wellington were very good at that point,
I think,
in time.
For me, I think, yeah. I think... So for the boys, it was always Wycliffe, because it's down the road, like Dulwich Wycliffe. So the boys are always that for them. But for me, obviously being an old Dulwich boy myself, for me, the big ones were always the sort of Wellington, Bedford, Tunbridge. Yeah. For me, St Paul's back in the day, but I think they're now back on the fixture list, but we didn't play them, which, for what reason. But for, yeah, Wellington, and we'd always play them out, and we actually became a bit of their bogey side.
Yeah.
So we had a, so for those from like 2011 till I left in 16, I don't think we lost.
Yeah.
Which is,
and they always against, had a good, good
and,
team.
And,
well,
oh,
they always
and
again, had a good team, but they always had really
against,
good teams.
Against those teams, and we were, it was probably nice we'd always play them earlier. We'd play them week one. So maybe that was before they go into this triad. But yeah, we sort of, that for me, and that was always sort of a barometer of how, like, actually, we're going to be all right. That's sort of based on how we go in those games. I remember, I think my last year, the year I left, 2015, we were a small, typical, we were small, but they, Wellington came up stacked and we beat them. And they were just, again, a typical, they were kids, thought they were better than they actually were, thought we're just going to roll over Dulwich. And our little kids came out absolutely firing. It was so they were a bit of our bogey. We were sort of almost the bogey team for them. It was always, loved the Wellington fixture. Got on well with the staff. Well, got on with almost all the other staff. But yeah, Wellington Saturday, 20 fixtures throughout the school. It was, great, great day. Absolutely love those days.
Trickier one this year probably, but you just never know, do you? Like, there's always room for just a big performance that comes in and
especially at school, and they still are kids. Like, you forget, like, I know that sort of they act old and the way they play, but they're still 17, 16 year old boys who have got loads going on in their lives on and off the pitch. So you might catch someone on an off day. You never know. Yeah,
precisely. A couple of other ones knocking around. Seaford Berkhamsted's quite an interesting one. Seaford have sort of had some good games, some bad games. See how they balance out. Similar to Burko, who've had some good results, but then actually a team we've not spoken about. It's that Burko went down against RGS by Wickham, who have been sort of off the
simmering.
Scene, well, not off the scene, but they've been, not what they were for a few years, but they look like they've got a team this year.
Yeah, I again, another school, love RGS Highwick and what they've done over the years. And we used to play them on a block, but it's just, we stopped because it was a bit far away in the end. But again, traditionally brilliant. But as you said, went off the boil a bit. But I think of last couple of years really been getting back on track. I think their lower sixth are very good.
Yeah.
I remember from Benny's playing them a couple of years ago under 15s, and they were exceptional. So, there's a bit of talk about them this year. But again,
it's
like Berkhamsted,
it's good to have it.
Want them back,
But
like Berkhamsted
school, they're a classic school.
Always had good players. Like Matt Dawson, Christian Way, Nick Beale, a lot of rugby players that come out of RGS by Wickham. But again, that Seaford Berkhamsted, there's two schools again over the last 5-6 years. Really put a lot of effort, hard work, resources, and generally a sort of now playing at the top table, aren't they? Like you wouldn't be surprised to see either of them beat a Brighton, beat a Dulwich, beat an Epsom, whatever it might be. They're there or thereabouts there now.
They certainly are. That'd be a good one. And then the other one that sort of stands out for me this weekend, just around the corner from that John Fisher Whitgift game, is Trinity Brighton. Trinity had a funny old start to season, but they look like they've refound a bit of form. But Brighton have started like an absolute train so far.
That will be a good game, as you said. Trinity, not a great start, but a good win yesterday in the cup against Epsom. And I've got to admit, I'd probably wouldn't have called that, but they've obviously Lucas Friday's their England under-18 scrum half, he's out injured. It would be a massive loss, but so a big win yesterday. But Brighton, like, again, they are a school that generally play this. You know, they're like, the breakdown is going to be an absolute mess. They're kings of the breakdown. They're bound to have gas out wide. I don't know if any other school apart from Milford that have always got electric wingers. Brighton always seem to have gas out wide, and they do like to play good rugby. So, that'd be, again, it's sort of this time of the season you then teams you really start to know whether actually, yeah, they're the real deal this year, or have they had a couple
of
easy
thing,
games?
Because the first couple of weeks, you don't know what everyone else's level is, so you've got to see how it all balances out.
Yeah, and I think that this week, sort of the week that you go, actually, they're a proper team. I think that game will sort of the win, like, we'll see actually where those two are. Like, if Trinity win that, then they're in the mix again, especially with Lucas to come back in. If Brighton win that, then they, again, so like, look at, they've beaten Tunbridge, Hampton and Dulwich, Brighton. Like, that's some going.
Actually,
that's some going already. Even if they haven't got the teams that they may have done, they're proper rugby schools, and they to beat all three of them, that's no mean feat. So, yeah, that's
well, especially
that's the a real big
that they seem to have as well. You know, it's a big old start to the season, that, from them.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a biggie. That's a good game.
Yeah. But now, a weekend full of crackers. Right, I've really got to rattle through now because we are short of time. But I've got to pick my limitless top five teams of the weekend. So the five teams from last weekend that stood out, not necessarily the best five teams, but five teams that sort of have impressed for one reason or another. So if you've got any thoughts, Sam, then jump in.
I sort of had a little look through all the results and things like that, and sort of one that we haven't mentioned, like, again, sort of, if you've sort of the slightly smaller scores, Caterham had a big win against King's Canterbury.
Yeah. Yeah.
With away, like, King's Canterbury, big rugby school, Caterham, if you're sort of trying to promote schools that maybe don't get as much airtime.
Like that.
For me, that was like, wow, that's a big win. But again, I think it's hard to, like, St Albans, just their record of what they're doing, 62 points.
It's incredible, isn't it? Obviously, but, I think Hurst winning away at Whitgift is...
That's a statement, isn't it? I think that should go in. I think that's definitely in.
Yeah, that's got to be in, I think. I think they're nailed in. I like that Caterham shout, actually. I hadn't thought about that, and I like what they've been up to.
I think that Clifton have won, or Harrow just beat Clifton, did they?
Clifton didn't play at the weekend. They were having an off weekend.
They played
Millfield on the Thursday night in that live game, which if that qualified, they would definitely be in, because that was just something else. I might argue Ipswich,
I think that's a massive win.
Denston are a tough old nut to crack.
Yeah, they are.
They gave Sedbergh a decent enough game.
A lot of Leicester boys. I think that's a big win for Ipswich.
Yeah, I'm very impressed.
RGS High Wycombe beat Hampton, is that one?
Yeah, I was going to say they're on my list of contenders there, because A, just what starts the season, but B, you know, Hampton are a hard side. They've been a difficult side for RGS to compete with the last few years, and that was a pretty strong win against a big school. The other one that jumped out for me as a game was St Peter's York against, I think it was Quags Wakefield, which was like 38-36 or something.
Again, two local big schools.
Yeah, exactly. I like ones like that. So they were in the mix for me. I mean, there's obviously lots of schools that had, you know, hatful of points at the weekend. You know, your Kingswoods and Durham's, you know, got big old scores, but you probably want to see them against teams on their level to get them.
I think that's St Peter's York.
Yeah. We've got Hurstby Point, Ipswich, RGSR Wickham, St Peter's, maybe Caterham. I'll tell you what.
Stick them in.
I'm choosing between Caterham, Harrow, Brighton, and maybe St Albans. Nah, I want to see St Albans compete against someone. I want to see them on their level.
Harrow and Brighton are going to come up again.
Yeah.
We know that. If Brighton beat Trinity, then you can give it to them then. Yeah. And if Harrow beat Wellington, give it to them next week.
Yeah. Right, there we go then. So, Caterham, Hurstby Point, Ipswich, RGS High Wycombe and St Peter's York. They are our limitless top five school teams of the weekend. And... what a weekend it was. What a weekend we've got coming up as well. Do remember to tune in. Three live games, under 16s at 11 o'clock at Ipswich as they host Sedbergh. onto the first 15s at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Ipswich Sedbergh again. 2:45, it's across to the other side of the country for rugby against Oundle, two classic schools going head to head, celebrating 200 years of the game. So that should be a pretty tasty Saturday, and then a bit of World Cup action. You get Scotland Romania at 8 o'clock. There you go. Bit of Finn Russell action. That's the way. That's always the way. Oh, he would have been a good schoolboy, wouldn't he? I'd have loved to see him at schoolboy level.
I bet he tore up. I bet he absolutely tore it up.
I bet he did. Can you imagine just the amount of defenders he'd draw into him at schoolboy level and then just ping it off?
Yeah, I could. He probably had all those kick passes in the blocker back then as well.
Almost
had the luck. Yeah.
Almost certainly. Right, Sam, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you on. We'll get you on again soon. I think we need to get you on before St. Joe's as well, because we've got to talk about the origins of that Dulwich dynasty that you built. Because there was
It started there. It did start there. So yeah, it'd be great to have that. And I suppose I just want to, on behalf of like all the kids, all the parents, all the coaches, thank you for all you've done literally for more than a decade with 15 Next Gen. Like the breadth that you cover is fantastic. Like all the kids, I know all the kids are massively into it, all the parents. Now you've got streaming. So just on behalf of everyone else, thank you, Angus, for all that you've done and are continuing to do and continuing to sort of push schoolboy rugby and obviously university rugby as well. Like, it really is appreciated. It really is. So thank you very much.
You're very kind, although I don't like being reminded that it's been a decade. Jeez, it's
more than that, I'm afraid, mate. No, time goes quick.
That's a little bit frightening, isn't it? That is a little bit frightening.
Yeah. But it's great.
We very much appreciate and we very much appreciate having you on. Do remember to listen, subscribe, download all the other bits and bobs. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and anywhere else that you find your podcasts and listen to them. And if you really, really want to, you'll be able to watch it on YouTube pretty soon as well. Sam Howard, thanks very much for joining us. And you listeners, thank you very much for sticking with us through this one. Join us again next time.